on digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook. The Sportscast, Summer of Soccer.
The update presented by The Sportscast.
Welcome to the Sportscast, July 2nd, 2024. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, X, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online radio. You can visit us on thesportscast.net, or you can follow us on X and IG on the Sportscast One, and check out our app, The Sportscast, for iOS. The U.S. men's national team have been eliminated from Copa America, the host team, after their loss to Uruguay 1-0. And join us to rehash this catastrophe going. Hal Phelps, welcome back to the Sportscast.
Thanks, Santi. I'm your man when there's a catastrophe to be discussed and dissected.
Hal Phelps, we had a game that we had to win. We also were depending on Panama, Bolivia, which Panama beat Bolivia 3-1. And the U.S. tried. Uruguay sneaked in a goal in the second half, but we just could not able to come back or win the game at all. It was bad.
They didn't score a goal. You can't get anything done if you can't score a goal. They had a few opportunities to score. And, you know, now there's a reckoning. So we are sort of grappling with what this team is, who's leading it, how good they really are, what can be done in the 2 years before the World Cup starts. That's a long time in international football. All the teams playing Euro 2024, for example, they're going to make changes if things don't go well in Europe this week or next week. So it's not that things can't be done. It's, do we have the will to do it? And, you know, all that remains to be seen.
As we see on the screen, the goal came in the 72nd minute. There was a debate going on if the goal from Uruguay was offside. As you see on the screen, there's a picture of Adams. His leg was out, and then the goal scorer was right on par with that offside line, Oliveira, who scored. What are your thoughts over this whole fiasco with VAR and maybe the ball not being onside?
Well, I'm trying to look at it in context. This is Copa America. It is the quadrennial championship conducted by CONMEBOL, the South American Federation. It's their party. They've invited folks into their tournament since 93. Because there's only 10 members, they need six more or some kind of guests to get, you know, into a situation where they can create a bracket or groups. And this year they decided to, for the second time, host this tournament in the United States. So while the U.S. is playing on home ground, it's not their tournament. They're not running it. This became evident last night to observers, television viewers, in several ways. One was, and I thought this was interesting, they're, you know, the camera angles that they chose at Kansas City's Arrowhead Stadium, just completely different from what we're used to seeing. It, you know, that there are different sort of customs and predilections that soccer fans have in South America. And one of them is, I've seen this myself, a much more steep viewing, you know, you can see it on that top picture there. That was imposed on the U.S. viewership. And when this call was made, I really was shaken by it. Shaken is maybe the wrong word, but jolted by it, because I thought it was definitely offside. I didn't see it in the moment. I saw the guy at the top of the screen for sure was offside. But then when the second, you know, the guy who's closest to the U.S. defender there, you know, he's the one who scored the goal. And, you know, his body is definitely past that that toe of the U.S. defender, and they still managed to call it a goal. And I'm on a soccer chat and we all watched it and we're like, that guy's off by a yard. Well, maybe not a yard, but he's off. And somehow they finagled to call this a good goal. And, you know, so I didn't think it was a good goal. But again, it doesn't matter. Panama won their game 3-1. We had to at least score a goal to match their performance. We had to match their performance or exceed it. And I'm talking about Panama's in order to advance. And you can't do that when you don't score. At one point, Panama was tied 1-1 and we were tied 0-0. That would have sent the U.S. through. But you must score a goal. When the referee is not on your side, you need to score goals. And this team could not do it against what was a better team than us. This may be the best team in the Americas right now. So there's no great shame in losing to them in this situation. But this whole experiment with Greg Berhalter Part 2 was predicated on his getting to coach this team in situations like this where they played really good teams. And they really only played one good team in this tournament because they failed to get out of the group. They lost it, and here we are.
Greg Berhalter, big subject last night. The pundits were talking about it right after the match. Alexi Lalas was not too happy about Greg Berhalter. And you see the picture right there. Greg Berhalter was telling his players that the game between Panama and Bolivia was 1-1, which it should not have been said. I mean, in my personal opinion. But Berhalter's job is on question. Eric Guinaldo said on Sirius XM this past week that Greg Berhalter's job is safe, according to his source from U.S. Soccer Federation. What are your thoughts about Greg Berhalter's position for the U.S.? You think he? I mean, do you think he can get fired, or do you think they'll probably keep him?
I don't know, and I don't think anyone knows. But I'll say this. He spoke like a man who was not worried about his job after this match. His tone, the sort of methodical way he was going to discuss the next few months and their reaction, the assessment of this match going forward. He made a few comments that explained what he thought the issues were and tried to take responsibility for them. He just didn't speak like a guy who thought his job was on the line or had just been lost. You know, it's a weird situation. Berhalter shouldn't have even come back to this team after the World Cup in Qatar. International soccer is different. You don't just go out and buy a striker because you don't have a striker. You don't go out and pick up a central defender because you don't have one, you know, in your national team pool. The only change you can make is the coach. And the idea that they would bring him back after the World Cup was weird. Most coaches who have value in the market don't go back and coach a second time. They're either from a country where there is no professional league worth a damn and they can make more money coaching the national team, inevitably, or I should say indefinitely. Coach in Croatia is a good example. I can't remember his name. He's coached five cycles in a row. He's very good. I think they're paying him a lot of money to make it worth his while. But why is Greg Berhalter, if he's a decent coach, why is he still coaching this team? He should be going off and coaching another team in club soccer where there's money to be made. And so that he can bring in a coach to take this team to the next level. His argument was, I'm the guy to take this team to the next level. And that has just not happened. So in light of that scenario, and we're talking about 18 months now since the end of the last World Cup, I think he has shown that you cannot count on him to take this team to the next level. So there's a lot of ways to think about that. And we can parse it if you'd like. There's problems with expectations in this country, but there's also problems with attracting world-class coaches to this job, even though we're hosting a World Cup. And I would point out that the American who was the most credentialed person to maybe take Berhalter's place is now coaching Canada. So he's out. It's sort of a question of where you want to begin this discussion, Santi.
Yeah, it's a lot of topsy-turvy. As Hal said, it is a Jesse Maharsh, who's coaching for Canada, who made it to the knockout stage in a tough group with Argentina, Hille, and I think the other team was, I don't remember who the other team was, but Canada pulled it out. So really happy for that.
Was it Peru?
I think it was Peru. Yeah. I chose Jesse March. I wanted him badly. He was available. He was interviewed as well, by the way.
Right. Yes, he was.
I'm not sure what happened. I'm not sure if the players had a lot of weight with that vote to get Berhalter back. But a lot of question marks. Let's look at the roster that started yesterday against Uruguay. Pulisic, Balogun, Reyna, Adams, Musa, McKennie. Then Robinson, Ream, Richards, Scally, and Turner. What were your thoughts over their performance, Al? Who really stood out to you?
This is where it gets complicated for me, because I do believe that Berhalter has run his course with this team, and he should step down or be fired, because we have 2 years to get somebody in there and do something else and raise the level of this group. But I thought through 60 minutes last night, this team played really, really well. And I think if you asked Uruguay whether they thought their opponent had played a good match against them that night, they would have said yes. For 60 minutes, they carried the play. They traded punches with them. They were physical. They were very, I thought, on the ball and with great touch in the midfield. They played the ball through Uruguay in a way no other team has in this tournament. And let's just be fair. I mean, this is for context. I'm not making excuses for the U.S., Uruguay is probably the best team in the Americas right now. They beat Argentina and Brazil in November during World Cup qualifying. They have shredded everybody they faced in this tournament. The U.S. put up a fight that they had not experienced. That isn't an excuse. It's just a fact. And I think if you go back and look at the U.S. game against the Dutch in the World Cup, again, you know, in Qatar 18 months ago, like I did, I would encourage you to go watch that game. That was a great performance by the U.S. with two lapses that cost them two goals. Actually, three defensive lapses that cost them three goals and the game. But that's to their credit. The Netherlands are a world-class side. They traded punches with them, and Berhalter gets the credit for that. The question is whether or not he can make them better going forward. If you want to put that roster back up, I'll let you know who I thought played. Well, I thought Balogun played his best game in a U.S. shirt last night.
He proved it this tournament. He really did.
Yeah, he actually was really unlucky not to get a penalty called. And, you know, in that sequence, someone stepped on his foot and he had to come out of the game. He only got 40 minutes. It was interesting to watch him play and watch the team play with Pepe, who came on for Balogun. Pepe, I thought, was good. His hold-up play is very good, and this team could use a guy like that. They're very different strikers. I thought Reyna was good. I thought Pulisic was fine. I thought Tyler Adams was great. I was afraid they were going to take Tyler Adams off at halftime, and they couldn't afford to do that. He was too central and too important to them. I thought Musa was good, and I was shocked that they took Musa off and left McKennie on, because I thought McKennie was terrible. He was a step slow all night. He couldn't separate and get balls across from his right wing. His touch was poor. He looked hurt to me, and I'm not sure why he played all 90. He was bad. And the defense, I thought, battled. Scally, you know, if you listen to – he got hurt and battled, and I thought hung in there. Jedi was Jedi, and our central defenders, who were probably the most important guys on the field last night, played a very controlled, smart – match. They didn't let anybody get in behind them in any serious way, and they played the ball from the central positions out through Uruguay, which is the fastest, most ball-hawking team in the hemisphere. They did very, very well until they gave up the goal that probably shouldn't have counted, and after that, you know, we had to go forward and expose ourselves. We were lucky not to give up another, but, you know, they were obviously watching the scores in Orlando between Panama and their opponents, Bolivia. So once it became 2-1, they knew they had to score two goals. And I think everyone recognized that was just never going to happen. But you can see right there, that's the live standings when that picture was taken. Yeah, the U.S., if they had drawn this game 0-0, there's like 54 minutes. That's exactly where they were. At 55 minutes, You had to feel pretty good about where the U.S. was in terms of their performance and in terms of their group progress. But, yeah, you give up a goal, goals change games. And when you're not getting the calls, you got to score goals. And they just couldn't do it. and they didn't really threaten terribly. They got three shots on goal. I think maybe they had two good chances to score. It's not a lot. And now against a team like Uruguay, sometimes that can be enough, and that's creditable. But this is just not good enough. And if this was Greg Berhalter's first game, we could say this is not good enough. Let's see what he does over the next 6 months. But we've had Greg Berhalter for 5-6 years now, and I think we know what he does. And it's not going to get this team to the next level trying to find someone else. It is complicated by the fact that the players clearly like him. The players clearly came out and played for him last night because they know that his job was on the line. They gave a very strong effort. But I think at some point, one has to ask, the Federation has to ask, have we gotten as far with this team as we can get by giving them a coach that they're very comfortable and happy with? It may be time to challenge them and test them with someone maybe they don't like so well, who doesn't make them feel so comfortable, and see whether or not that improves the end product.
And there's still time. As Hal said, we had 2 years of the World Cup, so there's time to change. Of course, we don't have competition like Copa America again, just friendlies. But, you know, it could be Berhalter, but that could also point back to this one play with Tim Weah versus Panama. How will this be remembered for the ages?
No, I think let's just take a step back, and let's do it by looking at Sweden. Okay, let's get some perspective. Is Sweden where the U.S. wants to be? We would say, no, we think we can be better than Sweden. I mean, Sweden is a decent European side. Who are they? We're a 340 million person country. We have the means and the resources and the will to win. We win at everything else. We could be better than Sweden. Well, Sweden is, you know, a past World Cup finalist. Sweden is a World Cup semifinalist and a European Championship semifinalist. They're, you know, they don't qualify for every tournament that, I mean, every major tournament they try to get into. They're not even participating in the European Championship that is going on right now. But their track record is very good. And yet our track record is terrible. And we think that we should be aspiring to something better than that. Americans don't really understand how international sports work. It's the whole freaking world competing against you. Imprimatur and pedigree don't mean anything. But the Swedes have done very, very well. And this is the kind of comparisons that we have to make. Now let's compare this team, which I believe is the most talented U.S. men's national team ever assembled. But, you know, the past teams that weren't as talented, you know, they would step up and beat good teams every once in a while. I've had some notes here, you know, at 1994 World Cup that Lawless played in, you know, they beat Colombia in the group stage. That's a big win. Colombia was very good. They might have even been better then than they are.
You think
are.
That group was kind of a group of death back then, 94?
Back then it was. They didn't. No one expected the U.S. to beat Colombia and get out of that group. They beat them. This is a team, you know, the U.S. national team from 2002 that beat Portugal and almost, you know, made a World Cup semifinal. Then, you know, they had a goal that should have counted against the Germans in the quarterfinal. They beat Mexico, but, you know, I'm not picking on Mexico, but, you know, we beat Mexico all the time, starting in 2002. That's just not an uncommon thing, but that's different. So it's worth pointing out that, you know, in that tournament in 2002, we beat Portugal, but we lost to Poland 3-1 and just barely squeaked in to the knockout round. This is what happens in tournaments. But in 2009, that's a wholly different team, the U.S. men's national team. That team beat Spain and ended a 35-match win streak. This was the Spain between winning European championship and a World Cup. So, I mean, the U.S. has had intermittent success against top world teams in the past. And I think this is the most damning thing that we can say about Greg Berhalter, is that his teams have never beaten a single world-class side other than Mexico in 5.5 years. They haven't gone to a tournament and surprised anyone. That's not good enough. And I think that when you say, will we remember this as Tim Weah screwing the U.S., screwing them in what way? So that they can get to a quarterfinal and lose to Colombia? It's, you know, it's unfortunate.
We're going to eventually lose.
Exactly. This is not a team that's threatening to win this tournament. And if we're trying to hold them, you know, up against past U.S. men's national teams, it's clear that under Berhalter, they haven't been able to even produce intermittent results that give anyone hope or reason to think that they are climbing in terms of their international capability and credibility. It's just not happening. And at some point, I think you have to cut bait. You have to say, we have talent. They're spending time with top clubs in Europe. That's good. So, you know, all these guys spend 10 months out of the year with a club, and we want them at good clubs where they will really improve. Greg Berhalter can't improve them when they come into a camp, but he can set them up in different ways. He can challenge them and make them uncomfortable in ways that will improve the unit and maybe improve individual players. He's not doing it. And the proof we have is they can't beat anybody in the top 25 in the world who's not Mexico. We know this now. And Copa America puts an exclamation point on that judgment. So the idea that he would stay is absurd. And but that's why it was so amazing to see him speak after the match in a way that he just didn't think that his job was on the line. And it might not be.
Very confident.
Who knows what the agreement is between him and the Federation.
Exactly. We'll see if, what happens in the next few days. Of course, things with international football takes a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. Then versus the club is kind of right off the bat. So we'll see what happens next couple of days or weeks. Let's go into back to the Euros. Portugal wins in penalties. Goalkeeper from Portugal, Diego Costa, saved all three penalties. How? As Portugal beat Slovenia 3-0 in penalties. It was 0-0 in regulation time. After Cristiano Ronaldo's extra time miss, he missed a penalty in regular time and actually extra time, but Portugal was able to beat him in penalties. I've never seen a team miss three penalties in a row.
It was amazing. The keeper for Portugal, I think it's Diego Costa, won this game, and not just in the shootout. Pepe stumbled late in the extra time, and a striker for Slovenia went in on goal with a chance to basically win this game in added extra time, and Costa saved that, then turns around and saves the first three penalties from Slovenia, and it's over. I mean, you would have thought the Slovenians actually had an advantage in that shootout. Oblak, who plays for Atletico Madrid, or he did. I'm not sure where he is these days, to have to be fair. He's considered one of the best goalies on earth, and yeah, he stopped Ronaldo's penalty. In regulation, Portugal could have won it in regulation. So you got to give the advantage to Oblak and the Slovenians in the shootout. Nope, Costa was immense. He guessed right three times, and at that point, as a shooter, the world just converges on your head. You're like, oh my god, this guy knows where I'm going. He knows where I'm going. Where do I go? And I guess the Slovenians can thank him for stopping three in a row so that the last two guys didn't have to shoot. And that is rare. Usually, I don't know that I've ever seen a shootout only go six shooters because, the other team has to make them all and you have to miss all of yours. So an amazing result. Not the most exciting game. I think we're all hoping for a little more open play scoring in the next round, quarterfinals.
Yeah. To confirm, Oblak does play for Atletico Madrid. So
thank you.
He's doing pretty good. In the other game yesterday, France beat Belgium 1-0, an own goal by Verstegen. It was also another poor game, but France was definitely trying to held up to that goal. But Jan Vertonghen, the ball hit his leg and became 1-0, which France will now meet Portugal in the quarterfinals. Your thoughts over this matchup?
What a matchup in the quarters is what I have to say first. What I have to say second is France is now into the quarterfinals and they have not scored anything that wasn't a penalty or an own goal. And they've played four matches. And this is the favorite in the tournament.
This reminds me of Argentina in 1990 where they hardly scored and they won the penalties.
Yes, it's very much like that. The third thing is that folks might realize that France is going through a political upheaval right now. The right-wing anti-immigration party won the first round of their snap elections on Sunday. This is happening while this tournament's going on. And this team is just loaded with immigrant players who, born elsewhere or born in France to immigrant parents. France is really a melting pot. And if you want to, if the U.S. were to base their team selection and their team shaping and their team ethos on anything in this world, it should be France, because that's a melting pot nation as well. And you don't have to look very hard to see, you know, the nameplates on the back of these shirts. This team is from everywhere in the French-speaking world, all over Africa and Europe and the Muslim world. So the idea that this is happening while these elections are being held, round two, the decisive round two will be this Sunday, is quite extraordinary. The players have come out and been very vocal. They don't want to play for a right-wing government. Not that they have any choice, but interesting times in France.
Interesting times in France. Of course, they face Portugal this weekend, so we're looking forward to that. Let's go into predictions. Right now, Netherlands are up 1-0 versus Romania. Who do you have going for that matchup?
I didn't think Romania had much of a chance. They're very, very happy just to be in the knockout stage. The Dutch are... This isn't the best Dutch team, but they're very good. And they'll take care of Romania, and I believe that Austria will thump Turkey later today.
There you go. Austria beats Turkey. This Friday quarterfinals begin. Spain versus Germany, which I think are the two best teams in the Euros.
Spain has looked like the best team. Germany looks like they might be peaking with a young team that's figuring it all out, and they're at home. What a match. I guess I like Germany. No one's talking about Germany to win anything because they were so unheralded coming in, but they're the only team playing at home. And it's not like the Copa America where the U.S. thinks they're playing at home, but CONMEBOL is running the VAR and, you know, 60% of the people in the stands are from elsewhere. It's going to be really interesting. That's a great game, but I think Germany will win. It's a big moment for a young generation of Spanish players.
I would think Germany too, because they're hosts. I think they'll squeeze it out eventually. Mm-hmm. Portugal versus France.
God, I love both these teams, and I think Portugal's deeper, but I think Mbappe hasn't even asserted himself in any way. I think he's going to, and I think it's going to happen in this match. So I guess I'm going to pick France.
France definitely is a powerhouse. They haven't turned on the switch completely. England versus Switzerland. England had an interesting game. They were losing against Slovakia, and Jude Bellingham scored in 1 or 2 minutes away from regulation time over, but England squeezed it out. Also, and then obviously Harry Kane scored an extra time. England versus Switzerland.
Let me answer in a little bit of a expository way. I watched this game on the plane coming home from Scotland. Kudos to Slovakia. Incredible tactical performance from them. They pressed England in a sort of passive way with six guys. If you stopped, that game was played so much, but you know, by the England back four, just passing it around because they couldn't figure out how to attack this team. And Slovakia had six guys in the England half in a grid that England didn't feel like they wanted to go over and could not go through, and they frustrated them. They nicked a goal, you know, by capitalizing on a mistake. They should have won this game. And England never solved that Slovakian high press, never solved it. So I guess that's a long way of saying, I think England's a very good squad when the bus is not being parked in front of them, especially in the way that Slovakia did. But if Switzerland has a brain, they will play England in exactly the same way, because Gareth Southgate either could not or simply would not adjust to what he saw in front of him, what I just described to you. They were terrible, you know, for 95 minutes and still nicked a goal that tied the game and sort of overwhelmed Slovakia in the overtime. They were tired. But so Switzerland is a good side. But if they choose to play an open game against England, they'll lose. But if they set up the way that Switzerland did, or in another sort of park the bus sort of way, I don't know that England has the confidence or the technical skill to actually break them down. They haven't shown that ability in this tournament, and they've had trouble with that at previous tournaments, as good as this generation of players has been. So I sort of think Switzerland will come out and try to press them. And if Gareth Southgate has any skill at all as a tactician, they'll figure out a way to beat them. So I'm going to pick England because I want them to be in the semifinal. It will be better for everyone. But I'm not doing that with a whole lot of confidence.
I think Tony, when they put Ivan Tony towards the end, I think he made a difference for England.
It was fascinating to watch. They loaded up that team with strikers at the end of regulation because they needed a goal so badly. So when they actually tied it and went into the overtime, Saka had to play left fullback. Eze, who plays, attack for Crystal Palace, he was obliged to play in the back because they took off all the fullbacks to score. Well, what happens in extra time when you actually score a goal and go ahead 2-1 and you have to protect the lead? That was fascinating. But maybe you know the answer to this, Santi. How many subs do you get in this tournament? It felt like 8.
It's 5 in regulation time. I don't know if they give you an extra subs extra time. I'm not sure.
They must because I think so, England brought on 2 guys once they took, once they scored the second goal and went up, they brought on Conor Gallagher and they brought on someone else to play defense at the very end of the game. I'm like, how many subs do they have? I mean, it's I'm old enough to remember when you had 1 when you were playing FIFA rules, then there was 3 and that went on for a long time. Now it's 5 in tournaments. Oh, and you get more in extra time. Wow.
You can change the whole roster.
Well, it's not, I'm an American and we don't always play FIFA rules when it comes to substitutions. I do think squad depth matters. I mean, if you have a better roster and you could leverage that, that's not cheating, but this seems a bit much to me.
It's a lot. So we'll see what happens. And then finally tonight, Brazil versus Colombia. Colombia's in. Brazil needs a point or 3 points to make it to the next round, just to confirm and have an insurance policy. But who do you have between Brazil versus Colombia?
I think Brazil is going to go all out to win this game because they don't want to play Uruguay. Who would want to play Uruguay? So I think that it'll be a fascinating match. Normally, you might see a draw here, or you might see them empty the bench and give some kids some experience in a big tournament. But I do think it's going to be an all-out attempt to win the game. And I guess I like Brazil. But this will be Colombia's chance to really shine and show them that they're equals. This is not a great Brazil team. And there's no better. I don't think there's any percentage in playing for a tie or giving Colombian youngsters a chance to play. If they win this game, they avoid Uruguay. They establish another win over Brazil and start to demystify that whole thing. So I expect a tooth and nail match, and I'm going to pick the Brazilians because they have more to play for.
Are you saying Uruguay is a favorite to win the Copa America?
No, Argentina has to be the favorite, but I believe that we could have an Argentina-Uruguay final. They look like the 2 best teams to me so far. Colombia doesn't look bad at all. Colombia just hasn't been tested yet. They haven't played a first-class team. They're going to get one tonight.
Exactly. We'll see what happens. Well, there you go. Yeah. Copa America Euros underway. The best part happens right now. You play conservatively in the group stage, but you go out of the knockout stage. Yeah. What is the best way to reach you online to talk to you about the future of the U.S. men's?
You can check out my book's companion site, genzero.halphillips.net. That address is right below me. And that's how you can reach me on Instagram and Threads, genzero.halphillips.
A lot going on, a lot of commotion. Last night, I do want to say one thing. There was a lot of new faces. I went to my local pub, new faces interested in this team, the U.S. They know they have a golden generation, you can call it. Depends who you ask. And this Copa America. So I saw some more interest. So there's promise, but of course we need to win, as Hal said. We got to beat the Uruguays. We got to build the Chiles. We got to beat the Argentinians.
There's only about 6 to 8 teams in the world that have won European championships, World Cups, or Copa America tournaments. It's not like, if we can just put a team together, we can go and win a major tournament. It takes, and that's in history that there's 8 to 10 teams that have won. It's not that it's very hard. That this is how international soccer works. You have to be really, really, really good, and the margins are really, really, really thin. And the U.S. is learning all this stuff firsthand.
Growing pains. Well, anyways, you can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on Instagram and X, and we'll be live tweeting throughout the week. Euros and Copa America, and of course, some NBA news a little bit. Klay Thompson to the Mavericks. Is that good?
Not well. I don't know why. I don't know why the Mavs spent money on him. I mean, is he that much better than Tim Hardaway as your third guard off the bench to shoot and do nothing but shoot for $50 million? Maybe that's the going rate. I don't know. But I have a good friend, my editor, actually, who's very upset that Clay has left Golden State. It feels like a betrayal to him. I think that's a little crazy in this day and age, but I think he's done. And do they need that much outside shooting? They need a score. They need a baseline score. They need someone who can create, you know, closer to the basket. They've got shooters.
The core has been broken up at Golden State. Anyways, Hal, yeah. Pleasure in talking to you. I'll see you next week.
All righty.
Let's go.